Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened the credit and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened the credit and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they've fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon, and we have an incredible show for you today. Incredible that it brings about information that is desperately needed now. And, I mean, there's a ton of information that we know on a consistent basis that is desperately needed to reach the ears and the minds, and more importantly, I should say most importantly, the minds of the masses. You know, and we should know that the corporate media does not do that job. The corporate media buries this this information. It obfuscates this information. It omits this information, all based on their complete plan, you know, of mass indoctrination and keeping things as the status quo, because we should know that in America, the media, the large media, is controlled by large corporations. There's the corporate media, the MSNBC, the CNN, NBC, ABC, you know, Fox News. These are all owned by major, mega corporations. And so Your World News, we're a tiny outfit. We're not corporate. We didn't receive no corporate money. Matter of fact, we spend money out of our own pockets to bring news and information to folks like yourself that are listening right now, folks like yourself that visit yourworldnews.org day to day, week to week, month to month, what have you, anytime you want to get some information. And also anytime you want to contribute to Your World News, you know where to reach us. You can contact us. Just go to yourworldnews.org and hit us up there if you want to write. As long as your writing is hard hitting from a radical left perspective, you know, we're looking forward to it, because quite frankly, I myself, we're not trying to, we're biased. We're biased towards the oppressed. We're biased towards those whose voices are repressed. We're biased to try to get that information out there. All right, the information about police brutality in America, the information about racial inequities, you know, throughout America, the information that about Western powers profiting from war and instigating war, you know, for their own profit, for their own self-interest. Those things and a range of things, women's rights issues. This is what Your World News is all about. So if you're interested in writing for Your World News, hit us up there. Today we got an interesting show. That being said, we have a more than interesting show. This is a show that I am really looking forward to, because we've got two amazing guests that are going to start to put together pieces of a puzzle that, unfortunately, literally tens of millions of people worldwide, and yes, probably tens of millions of Americans, have been duped by, and that is the invisible children. We're going to find out who the invisible children are, who finances them, who backs them. We're going to be talking about Kony 2012, because just like with Libya last year, you know, most Americans weren't even thinking about Libya, couldn't tell you where Libya was on a map before corporate media and the government told them to. Well, we have Kony 2012. We have Kony 2012 that was released last week, and within 2 days it had over 50 million views. 3 days, I can't remember how. I haven't visited, but I remember the first time. I mean, when I looked at it the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, 26 million views in 24 hours. That was unbelievable. I mean, and it was well put together. It was produced straight out of Hollywood. It was like, you know, one of these big time Hollywood, you know, producers and directors put this together. I mean, it was well done, tapped into the emotions, all this stuff. They're a little white kid, and with all his innocence, you know, being, you know, asked the questions. I mean, he was used as an excellent prop by his father, who is with Invisible Child. I mean, it was a very well put together piece. However, it's propaganda nonetheless, and not the good propaganda, the propaganda that has lies by omission and lies by commission. So we're going to be discussing who the hell is the Invisible Children, who are they backed by, who are they financed by. We're going to be joined by Michael Kirkpatrick, who is an investigative journalist. He'll be coming on, and he's actually been to Uganda and northern Uganda many times, has good connections on the ground there, but he has really unearthed a lot of things, and he's not a Johnny come lately in terms of looking at investigating invisible children. He's been investigating them for some time now. He'll be telling us his story. It's a very riveting story and information that you need to know. So when you hear this, make sure you take the link. If you're hearing this on live or on archive, you know, folks that haven't listened, post on your Facebook, send it out. they were going to want to hear this. In the second hour of the show, we're going to be joined by Keith Harmon Snow, investigative journalist, war correspondent, who also has been to the Great Lakes region in Africa many times. He has written down and exposed groups like the Enough Project and Invisible Children many, many times. He's going to be coming on the show breaking down what you need to know, what we need to know. Because, you know, as we did a show last week about this whole thing, it just reeks. And you know, so you have the naysayers that come on and say, hey, you know, well, what's wrong with that? If it's bringing attention about child soldiers or such and such, if it's bringing, you know, attention to the child soldiers, then what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it? Well, we're going to tell you what is wrong with this. Child soldiering is, yes, it is reprehensible and repugnant to the highest degree. No one is going to defend Joseph Kony at all. All right, but the fact that this propaganda has been put out there, there's a subtext to this, folks. It's not put out there, and it's not supposed to be out there. But there is a subtext why this move by them is so vastly important by them. But first of all, Joseph Kony hasn't been seen in years in Uganda. All right, he hasn't been seen there in years. But even before we get to Kony, how come, do we ever ask ourselves, like, if you, people are so interested in justice and so interested in black and brown children, why don't these folks speak out against the police brutality that goes on that has literally taken the lives of black and brown children in America? Why don't anyone ever talk about that? Why don't these white liberals, why don't they talk about that? Why don't they talk about the brown, you know, children throughout the world in places like, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan? At least 500,000 children have been killed since 2003 by way of U.S. and NATO, you know, war, you know, drones and missiles and town-to-town, you know, raids. I mean, you know, we just saw that some of the people that were killed by that U.S. Soldier this past weekend, you know, with children in Afghanistan. Why don't they go after, you know, a force that has killed far more brown and black children, you know, worldwide than Kony ever could dream of? And that's the U.S. That's the U.S. military. Why don't they talk about that? Why don't they talk about the brutal dictator that rules? You know what I'm saying? And the corrupt government that rules over, you know, from the scene of Yoweri Museveni, who was the president of Uganda. Why don't they talk about that? Why don't they talk about him? I wonder why. Well, we're going to answer those questions. The guests that are coming on, they're going to expose some information regarding Kony 2012, regarding invisible children, like none other that we haven't seen, you know, in the corporate media. The corporate media is not about this kind of exposure. Corporate media role, their role is not to investigate. Their role is to support, is to continually support, you know, Kony 2012. And these folks are calling for U.S. intervention. U.S. intervention. We wanted U.S. intervention to go in there and take Kony out, right? Kony hasn't been seen in Uganda, you know, in years. We want them to go in there. All right, and lo and behold, oh my gosh, what they're not telling us, oh my gosh, like, you know, they've discovered oil in northern Uganda. Yeah, they're not going to tell you about that, but this program we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the oil that has been discovered in northern Uganda. All right, you know, they're going to talk about the U.S. military exercises like Operation Thunder and Lightning that took place in Uganda. You know, a couple of years ago. That's going to be discussed on this program. All of these things and more are going to be discussed by Michael Kirkpatrick and Keith Harmon Snow. Michael will be coming on in just a few moments, and then later on in the show, as I said before, we'll be joined by Keith Harmon Snow, who is an investigative journalist and a war correspondent. He's been on Russia Today many times. He's been on this show several times, and his work is quite frankly invaluable. I mean, it really is invaluable in many ways. And so I definitely, you know, implore folks to check out allthingspass.com. So we're gonna go to a Black Agenda Report commentary, and then when we return, we will be going getting into the interview and hit the ground running. This is a power-packed episode. Thanks for joining us, whether you're listening live or on archive. This is Your World News, and here we have Brother Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report.
President Obama is like comedian Flip Wilson's character, Geraldine. He blames everything on the devil. The devil made him do it. And so the devil has just forced Mr. Obama to put together his own infernal super PAC, the demon spawn of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, allowing corporations and wealthy individuals to spend as much money as they like on elections. Only days ago, Obama was calling super PACs a threat to democracy. But that was then, and now it's time to make sure that the president has an equal opportunity to join in the corruption. But don't blame Obama. The Koch brothers made him do it, with reports that the far-right siblings plan to gather $100 million in super PAC money. As Geraldine would say, those Koch devils made Obama do it. Not that there's any danger of Obama being outspent in his re-election bid. He's raised more money than all the Republican candidates combined. In fact, he's raised a lot more money from employees of Mitt Romney's private equity firm, Bain Capital, than Romney has. All indications are that Obama will win the race for Wall Street's campaign contributions, hands down, no matter who the Republicans nominate, just as Wall Street preferred Obama to John McCain 4 years ago. Candidate Obama opted out of public financing in the 2008 campaign, the first president since Watergate to run without public financing. He'd earlier promised to accept public funding and the limits on spending that go with it, if McCain did. McCain kept his part of the bargain, but Obama was getting more money than he could bring himself to turn down. In fact, by that time, Obama had raised twice as much as McCain, so he couldn't claim a disadvantage. Instead, Obama's excuse was that the public financing system was broken. But of course, it was Obama's withdrawal that definitively broke the system, paving the way for the billion-dollar election of 2012. In the summer of 2007, Obama explained the difference between himself and all of his Democratic and Republican opponents when it came to taking money from the rich and greedy. The argument is not that I'm pristine because I'm swimming in the same muddy water, he said. The argument is that I know it's muddy and I want to clean it up. But there is no evidence that Obama wants to clean up campaign financing, only that he finds all kinds of excuses to take the money. The Wall Street crowd loves Obama, and they show it with their checkbooks. He returns their love 1,000 times over by protecting their interests while skillfully hoodwinking the Democratic base into believing that he's on their side. The most pitiful marks in this hustle are small contributors, who Obama claims are his real base of support. Back in 2008, he even claimed that his fundraising was a better reflection of democracy than public financing, because he had so many small contributors. But it turns out that Obama got almost exactly the same proportion of his campaign funds from the little guys as George Bush did in 2004. It's a rich man's game, in which the future of the country and the world is purchased cheaply with campaign contributions. It is common sense that the player that collects the most money has also sold the most influence. This election year, just like last time, the top influence seller is Barack Obama. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.
And as I said before, we're going to be joined in a few moments by Michael Kirkpatrick, who is an independent investigative journalist and advocate and has just done some amazing work. And I'm going to let him tell his story. We're going to get into a nice, you know, conversation based on you know, just some startling information that that I've come across, and that people that follow Michael Kirkpatrick's Facebook page and you know, follow his work have come across. And you know, I just ask you all, once you hear this show, please make sure that you send this link out to all of your friends, your networks, your comrades, because that's the only way for us to combat what the corporate media will not tell you regarding this issue of invisible children and who they're backed by, who they're financed by. There's a lot of things that we're not supposed to think about. So as I said before, Michael Kirkpatrick is an investigative journalist, and you know, he's going to be joining us right now. I'm going to put him through, and just brace yourself. This is going to be a special ride. Michael, can you hear me?
Yep, I'm here. I'm listening in. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Just, I want to first and foremost thank you for coming on Your World News and taking time out of your schedule to do so. And actually, first and foremost, thank you for your work that you've done. And I've told our listeners that you're someone who has spent a lot of time in Uganda and has spent time in northern Uganda as well. You've seen IDP camps, and we'll get into all that stuff. But, you know, I really, on behalf of everyone at Your World News, I want to thank you. And I just want to start off by asking you the first question. What took you to Uganda in the first place? Why did you, you know, start your travels, you know, to Uganda, you know, many years ago? Why Uganda?
That's a great question. Let me give a little introduction first. I want to preface everything that I say here by I use the term independent global citizen kind of, you know, as my brand, in that the message is that I have no agenda. I do not work for any charity, church, NGO, business, government. My experiences traveling to Africa are solely personal, and, you know, I would categorize them as I go there on vacation. You know, some people like to go to Disney World. Some people like to go on a cruise. Some people like to go to the beach. I like to go to Africa, and I'm blessed enough to have a wife that feels the same way. So we've been to Africa several times. The first time that we went was in 1998, and that was prompted out of the blue. There's a whole story that goes before that, but you'll have to wait for the book for that to come out. But basically, we were invited by a Ugandan gentleman. He was running a grassroots organization to help orphan children and peasants in rural areas of southern Uganda who were impacted by HIV, by AIDS. It was something that we were curious about, because he was Ugandan and he was helping his own community. There was no affiliation with any large institutional type of charity or philanthropic organization. So my wife and I took this gentleman up on his offer. You know, we agreed to go, and we made plans. It's the first time I've ever traveled to Africa. So in, I believe it was June of 1998, my wife and I arrived in Uganda. And we, you know, just like most people who, their first impression of Africa, you're going to have this kind of white savior notion of helping. Now, helping people is not a bad thing. But, you know, it was kind of like, okay, there's a school there, there's kids, there's orphans, you know, we're so blessed, we have so much, you know, we want to be a blessing to others, you know, all the cliches, all the catchphrases, all the, you know, I want to have a heart for Africa, you know, I just want to love on these people. So we kind of went initially with that attitude. It was kind of like, what can we do to help these people less fortunate than us? So that was our first trip. I don't know if you've got another question.
Yeah. My next question was, you know, looking at the whole, and we can lead up to it, the whole Coney 2012 thing. But before that, before we get into Coney 2012, you're not a Johnny-come-lately in terms of folks that has been, you know, looking with a critical eye at Invisible Children. I think that we should take a critical eye at any nonprofit organization, and, you know, in terms of knowing where we're potentially about to send our money and our resources. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what are your thoughts on Invisible Children, positive or negative, and why so?
Yeah, I've never, you know, I always get the questions about, you know, why do you go to Africa? There's always people here in America that need help. The story of me and my wife is our own personal story. I believe it, you know, I don't want to sound melodramatic, but it's kind of a divine story. We didn't wake up one day and decide to do this. I didn't, you know, see a commercial on television. I didn't read a book. We were personally invited by somebody. And when we went there, our perception of Africa was radically changed. The things that we had seen in the media, you know, were different than what we were actually experiencing personally on the ground. So, you know, when I came back, we had all this passion. Now, of course, people were like, oh, you should start your own charity, or you should work for a charity. Oh, this is what God has called you to do. You're meant to help people. You're so passionate about it. Well, you know, I started just doing research. You know, my background is computers, supply chain analyst, business analyst. I'm very detail oriented, and you know, I think somewhat. My wife will tell you I'm cheap. I'm a frugal son of a bitch, and right. I know where my money goes. So you know, I would research organizations, and when I start, you know, getting skeptical or criticizing organizations, my friends in Africa would say, Michael, just stop. Just stop. Do not focus on negativity. We're used to it. We are used to people coming here and exploiting us. We're used to people here coming and having a job, helping us poor, unfortunate Africans. That's just the world we live in. So stop spending your energy trying to, you know, tell people to do things your way. So I was like, you know what, they're right. So my focus then became on the work of my Ugandan friends in Uganda. So, you know, whether they were artists or musicians or performers or authors, I mean, I found a huge amount of talent, of creativity. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, this isn't the Africa that I was exposed to, or that I grew up learning about, or in school, or that I see in the media. And I'm like, there's a disconnect here. Well, Invisible Children, I've been aware of Invisible Children for years. Actually, I've been aware of Invisible Children since their inception, because there was this kind of camaraderie in that, wow, you care about East Africa, I care about East Africa, we're in this together, because helping people is done all the same. It's all pure motives, and it's all done out of the goodness of your heart. So, you know, I would follow Invisible Children. Well, at some point, they kind of went off track. But my friends continued to tell me, Michael, who cares? We know about Invisible Children. Pay them no attention. Well, even on one of my trips to northern Uganda, I even went to the Invisible Children office. You know, I talked to people there. They're not bad people. You know, they're there to help and you know, do a good thing with their life, or to help others less fortunate. So I've kept, and Invisible Children is not the only organization that I've been, you know, kind of researching, and it's more research to say, let me take the best practices of all of these organizations and put them together and see if I can, you know, kind of assist and be an advocate and be a partner and collaborate with my Ugandan friends and be a resource for them. Well, something changed all of that. And the thing that changed that was when I heard in the news about this LRA disarmament in northern Uganda Reconstruction Act that was being submitted to Congress. And it was being promoted by Invisible Children. And I kind of thought to myself, okay, I see the connection, but there's something weird going on because now this is politics. This is actually politics. And, you know, working for a nonprofit or a charity, you know, even churches in America, it's written into the IRS law and rules and guidelines that there's lobbying, there's kind of a gray area with lobbying when it comes to the border or what is crossing the line. The line itself is blurry. You're allowed to advocate and educate people, but you are not allowed to hardcore lobby or spend a pretty large chunk, in the case of Invisible Children, on lobbying efforts. Because, you know, hey, in America, if you're not paying taxes, you shouldn't be having an impact or an influence on law. So I was following this story in the news, and I started writing stories and articles and submitting them to media outlets and saying, why isn't anybody questioning this? Why are these other advocacy groups that are sister organizations of Invisible Children, and organizations like Resolve, organizations like Enough, who is headed by John Pendergrass, why are these organizations also involved? And why aren't senators, why aren't congresspeople, why aren't other nonprofits kind of raising a yellow flag and saying, wait a second, now this is a bill that's calling for military intervention, and why is a 501c3 advocating for this? Well, I figured, well, you know what? I'll play the game. I will talk to my senator. I'll participate in these discussions. I'll try and contact my representative. I sent emails out. I even went to the office of Senator John Cornyn, who was my senator here in Texas. I was physically removed from the office. They knew what I was there to do, and I was not allowed to speak. Now, I thought that was odd because John Cornyn sits on the Foreign Relations Committee.
Right.
In the U.S. Senate. Now, that really rubbed me the wrong way. So I continued to kind of dig into it. Well, the next thing I know, the bill passed. And I'm like, okay, it's almost like this bill had been written years ago, but they just needed a reason or a good marketing or PR campaign to get people to pass it. Well, then I learned, you know, it's been a long time since I've been in civics class or, you know, tried to understand anything about how government works. But, you know, there's a whole issue of appropriation. How does money get appropriated to a bill? Because in order to do your budgeting, heck, you're going to do your household budgeting, you have to know money coming in, money going out. Well, hey, same thing with our government. They have to know, you know, tax revenues, and they have to know their expenditures, military expenditures, you know, social service expenditures. This bill had no appropriations associated with it. It was basically a blank check. And nobody questioned that. I'm like, okay, so now we've written a blank check that I believe, and maybe some people will correct me, but I believe justified for the first time in American history through a law passed by Congress and signed by a president. It was not an act of war, but for the first time in history, it justified by law us going into a sovereign nation and hunting down to assassinate an individual. This was written into U.S. law, and nobody questioned it. Hmm. And I was like, wait a second. Now, to kind of back up a little bit, I had been in northern Uganda. Now, my first trip was in 1998. My wife and I had gone back and forth several times. We've been there a total of 7 times since 1998. My last time was in 2010. Now, my first trip to northern Uganda, to Gulu and the surrounding region, was in 2007. Well, all this bill stuff in Congress and all this activity by Invisible Children came after 2007. I think it was in 2010 the bill was signed, or it was passed and then signed into law in 2011. I forget the exact time, but it's fairly recent. Now, years before this law even was up for voting or even being discussed or lobbied, vigorously lobbied. Years before, in 2007, I was in northern Uganda, and there was peace.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I was there. Nobody talked about Kony. Nobody talked about child abductions. All of that was over. And I was like, then why is there talk about hunting Kony or saving these poor, unfortunate kids? Now, the camps were still there. I had actually gone into the camps, talked to people. I was given pretty liberal access to anything I wanted. I was allowed to take a video camera. I was allowed to take a still camera and go into the camps and take pictures, record people, do whatever I wanted. And, you know, so I kept, for historical purposes, just say as a, you know, journalist or investigative journalist, it was, I'll put it in my archives. This is, you know, part of my past, part of my experience. Well, when this bill hit, I was like, okay, there's something going on here. Why all of a sudden is there so much interest in Uganda where people are rebuilding and they are thankful that there's no more talk of war? They're thankful that this is behind them because, of course, these atrocities happened. Now, I was in the camps. Now, people don't talk about the IDP camps in northern Uganda.
Right.
Now, one of the things that people need to understand, and I'm not making this up, there was a genocide going on in Uganda. There was a documented, strategic genocide going on in Uganda for probably 10 to 15 years. And it happened, you know, during that same time as Rwanda and as Darfur. Well, geographically, the Acholi land, northern Uganda, is sandwiched between Darfur and Rwanda. And I'm like, okay, why are Darfur and Rwanda getting all this attention, but nobody's paying attention to this other genocide? Well, one is it wasn't sensational. The Rwanda genocide was very sensational because there's estimates that, you know, 800,000 to a million people were slaughtered in 100 days. That sells headlines. That is sensational. Darfur, the same thing. You know, we could demonize the president of Sudan and pick him up on war crimes. But I'm like, for goodness sakes, I actually was in camps where there were people who were victims, not just victims of Joseph Kony and the LRA, but these camps were built by the Ugandan government under the guise of protecting the Acholi people. These were not havens of safety. These camps were not havens of safety. They were death camps. And the genocide that was going on was a slow motion genocide that, not to belittle the seriousness, but it was like watching grass grow. Because the methods of genocide were twofold. One was through attrition, through disease. There was no sewage provided. There was just, you know, it was a disgusting, filthy, you know, environment. Another one was, heck, there were raids that were going on and atrocities being committed by the Ugandan army themselves. There's stories of babies being taken away from mothers and thrown into pit latrines and rapes by the Ugandan army who were supposed to be protecting them. So what I started to develop was there's a narrative here that is what I call bad, bad. You know, in a battle of two sides, just because one side is bad doesn't automatically make the other side, or because one side's bad doesn't automatically make the other side good. This is a case of bad, bad. Both sides of this conflict were committing atrocities. And this was totally off the international radar. Totally off. Now, in 2005, there was a top UN official, a top humanitarian UN official who actually met with Joseph Kony, who actually went to the IDP camps that I saw, and he called it by far the worst humanitarian disaster on the face of the planet.
Mm.
And he was ignored by UN officials. He was ignored by countries. He was ignored by philanthropic organizations. He was ignored by everybody. And he documented it in a book. And his name's Jan Egeland.
Mm.
He went everywhere to tell people about this. He was totally ignored. Now I ask the question, why was he ignored? Invisible Children did not discover this. Invisible Children, the name in and of itself, Invisible Children, is a misnomer. It's a catchy marketing tool because people knew about these atrocities and they also knew all of the responsible parties involved. Now, the death toll in these IDP camps, there's estimates. The World Health Organization and the UN estimated that 1,000 people died a week. So let's do the math. 52 weeks a year, that's 52,000 people dying in a year. I will be very conservative and say this went on for 10 years. That's 520,000 people. I'll round it off to 500,000. 500,000 people perished unnecessarily in these death camps. Now, okay, 800,000 to 1,000,000 people died in Rwanda. I'm not sure what the estimates are in Darfur, but this genocide rivaled Rwanda and Darfur, yet was totally ignored. One of the major reasons, the president of Uganda is a major ally of the United States of America.
You got it.
Because we cannot implicate somebody who we send weapons to. We can't implicate somebody that we support financially. We can't support somebody who we praised from the presidential office as being a new breed of African leader. We can't then admit that we're supporting a genocidal dictator who's in power for 26 years and who has rigged 3 elections.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no way the State Department, the Pentagon, or Congress, or anybody would admit that, because as soon as we admit it, we are guilty of war crimes. We are guilty of assisting crimes against humanity. That story can never be told. Well, I don't know if you have any other questions, but I can continue going on.
Yeah, definitely, I do. Can you tell us, you know, when I spoke to you offline, you have a really interesting story that has to do with, you know, once you start to delve deeper into, and more recently, you know, once you started to delve deeper into Invisible Children, you were, if you could tell the story where, you know, not too long afterwards, you were visited by federal agents, and I'll put it politely that way.
Yeah, well, you know, I had let the work of Invisible Children go, even after this bill got passed, and I thought, okay, they're just being used patsies to basically, you know, do whatever the Pentagon wants and to justify and prepare the hearts and minds of Americans for humanitarian aid in, you know, parts of Africa. You know, I let that go. Well, back in January of 2011, now again, through social media, I can follow a lot of organizations through their Facebook pages, through their Twitter accounts, through their websites, through, you know, I feast on information. Well, in January of 2011, Children came across my Facebook feed, my news feed, and it said, basically to the extent that the three guys in Invisible Children were gearing up to go into the jungles of Africa to capture Joseph Kony, that these three guys, because of the inaction of the international community, were going to basically go get him themselves. I'm like, what? And people are eating this up? Well, I had a very juvenile knee-jerk reaction to what to do about it. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we were breaking up a little bit. I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, the knee-jerk reaction I had to that was I picked up the phone and I called Invisible Children. I called their headquarters. And when the person on the other end answered, I used my best African rebel warlord impersonation, said, "I hear you're looking for me." Well, now the person on the other end didn't understand. So they said, "Well, who is this? What's your name?" And I said, "My name is Joseph Coyne." Now, unknown to most people in this whole saga is that who is commonly called Joseph Coney, K-O-N-Y, it's not pronounced Coney. In the Acholi language, it's pronounced coin. There's no Y sound. It's coin. So I pronounced it properly. And the person on the other end started engaging me in conversation. So I did not threaten, did not use language. Two sentences that I used were, "I hear you're looking for me, and my name is Joseph Coyne." With one of those two phrases. Well, at some point, and, you know, "Can you hold on a second? You need to talk to somebody else." Well, I figured if they're not recording my phone call right now, they're going to start. So I hung up. But within a minute, they called me back. Now, that may not be anything shocking because you can start 6-9, but they called me back, and I didn't answer. Well, immediately I thought to myself, that was really stupid, Michael. Why are you doing this? You know, we just let it go. And I'm like, crap. Now these people know who I am, they have my phone number, and they know that I pulled the stupid prank. Told my friend, who is an Acholi, who lives in Europe, what I did. And claimed to be Joseph's secretary. And they were sorry that we got disconnected, but, you know, the office helped them. Well, I think these phone calls kind of freaked them out. Like, hey, it's not Joseph Coney, but somebody's playing a really despicable, practical joke on us. This is not funny. Who would call us and pretend to be, you know, one of the world's most wanted criminals and wanted by the ICC? This is a real sick joke. Oh, just let it go, Michael. That is your last interaction with Invisible Children. Do not let anything they do provoke or prompt you into doing anything. Well, when my wife came home that night, we went out to dinner. I told my wife what I did, and my wife was like, "Michael, man, you're an idiot. You know, you just can't let this go." Well, that phone call happened on a Friday in January of 2011. Wait, sorry. On the following Wednesday, door. I was visited by at least a dozen full agents.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you went out for a second.
Okay.
The last thing I heard is that you were visited by a dozen federal agents.
Yeah, I was visited by a dozen federal agents. Homeland Security, Secret Service, and the FBI all showed up at my house with a battering ram and entered my home. They came into my home and they went through everything. Two agents sat me down. It was an intimidating event. Nothing like this had ever, ever happened to me. These were armed agents with weapons, with flak jackets, guns, with video cameras, with still cameras. Two things I remember that the agents kept repeating to me were, "Who else is here with you? Who else is here with you? Is there anybody else in the house? You need to tell us if there's anybody else in this house." And I told them, there's nobody else in the house. Then they kept telling me, wow, you have a really nice house. This is a beautiful home you have here. Wow. Wow, this is a nice house. It's like, okay, enough of the small talk. Well, a neighbor saw what was going on and called my wife, who works pretty close by. My wife hears that there's all kinds of activity and agents and swarming and guns at my house. So she rushed home. She came in the house just utterly shocked. We were not allowed to be together. She was escorted into a different room of the house. We were not allowed to see each other, talk to each other, touch each other, make eye contact with each other, or anything. We were totally quarantined from each other. The agents sat me down and started basically interrogating me without legal representation. Now, here I have people with guns, representatives of the U.S. government, you know, these are top law enforcement in the United States of America, and they're asking me questions, and I'm, like, just in utter disbelief and shock. So I'm trying just to be agreeable, just do whatever they say. Do whatever they say and do whatever they want. So they start talking to me. And I asked them what the search warrant was about. Well, the search warrant, they did have a search warrant. And they showed me the search warrant. Well, unbeknownst to me, I'm a pedophile and I manufacture and distribute child pornography. Now, I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, what the? You got all these. Now, I'm thinking to myself, good Lord, like, I'm being accused of being the most heinous, worst of the worst there could possibly be, and this is just totally out of the blue. Now, I'm thinking to myself, you know, all this is happening, like, all these emotions, you know, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like, they're going to tell my wife that I'm a pedophile. They're going to tell my wife that, like, I'm just some pervert. And like, this is just the end of, literally, this is the end of me. This is the end of my life. My marriage is over. My life is over. My job, just everything. Well, they went through my house. They also intimidated my wife. They left my house. Now, here I am. Of course, I'm totally innocent. You know, there's no... Heck, I don't even have, you know, Sports Illustrated bikini issues or downloaded stuff on my computer. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Totally clean. So, but what do? They leave my house with my computers and all my data storage devices, which I still don't have. So this, to me, was an intelligence thing, where they took, you know, my computers, all my data. And what people have said to me who've experienced this before is that, Michael, they know that you know something. They know that you know something, but they don't know how much you know, and they don't know who you know. That's what they have to figure out. They have to figure out your network. Now, believe me, I am not Julian Assange. I am not WikiLeaks. I've never even visited the WikiLeaks website. I am not, you know, some revolutionary anarchist. I'm not an activist. I'm just trying to help my friends in Uganda. And I'm getting visited by Homeland Security. Well, that really rattled me. I mean, that rattled me. I mean, still to this day, whenever the doorbell rings or there's a knock on the door, my heart drops to my stomach. Now, even after that, I was starting to get letters from the Department of Justice, or letters that had Department of Justice, you know, letterhead, saying, basically, I'll paraphrase, you're fucked. You better get a lawyer, because you're going to federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison. It did not paint a pretty picture. And, of course, they're focused on, well, the first letter I got from the Department of Justice was theft of mail. And I'm like, okay, they come with a search warrant for child pornography, then they're going to prosecute me for theft of mail. Well, then, you know, these people are calling me. Department of Justice is calling me and local Secret Service. And I'm like, this is utterly ridiculous. Why am I being charged with stuff? I don't even know what that means. Like, what is the crime? Like, what's the statute? Well, then they go, oh, well, we're sorry, sir. I think we might have made a mistake. So they sent me another letter. This letter was for transfer of obscene material to a minor. Well, I'm like, what? So you guys make some stupid typographical or, I don't know, you couldn't even keep your damn story straight. You know, you pulled out the wrong letter in the harassment file and sent to be my mistake. So now the charges are all over the place. The letters are different. Now, here I am, 14 months later, 15 months later, I've never been taken into custody, I've never been charged, and I've never been arrested. Now, maybe when this interview gets broadcast over the internet and somebody with the Department of Justice or Homeland Security hears it, they'll be like, well, shit, we better do something because everybody thinks that this is a joke now. Well, it is a big fucking joke. Well, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. I'm getting raided by Homeland Security, and I made a phone call to Invisible Children 4 days earlier. Could these possibly be connected? Like, is that possibly, did somebody rat me out? Now, I fought back even earlier before then. When I came back from Gulu in 2007, I was so just shocked at what I learned in northern Uganda, that basically, you know, it boils down to kind of the phrase I use. It's just a twisted tale of, like, silent conspirators, secret agents, money, war, children, refugees, terrorism, and, of course, oil. I learned all of this on one of my trips to northern Uganda in 2007. So when I came back, there was a presentation by the head of one of these advocacy groups at a local university, and his name was John Prendergast. He's the head of Enough. Well, here I am. I went with one of my Sudanese friends, who you would call one of the lost boys of Sudan. We got access to John Prendergast, and we had a private meeting with him, one-on-one. And I'm like, here's a guy who just absolutely has a heart and a love, and he wants justice. That's all over his website. John Prendergast and Enough want justice for Africans. They want justice for people in Congo, justice for people in Uganda, justice for Darfur, justice, justice, justice. They want peace. So I told him, I said, you'll never believe what I saw in Uganda. Well, one of the things that I saw, now it's common knowledge that our military troops in wars scattered across the globe, whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, or Somalia, it's common that military contractors are a part of that conflict. Military contractors, it's no secret that they're hired. And there's no secret that they hire other foreign nationals. Hey, that's fine. Some people look at that and say, hey, you're giving people jobs and you're paying them and they're appreciative and, hey, you know, they can wash the pots and pans and drive the trucks and do the laundry and all that stuff. Some of them are even security guards. Well, I had met some people when I was in northern Uganda who were working for the British High Commission. There was people learning the Acholi language. One of the things that I witnessed when I was there was military contractors recruiting in IDP camps. That was kind of the seed that was planted that something was wrong. That, for goodness sakes, these people have been through hell. Whether they have experienced living hell at the hands of Joseph Kony or at the UPDF and the president of Uganda, it doesn't matter who has inflicted the horror upon them, but here now are U.S. military contractors recruiting victims to go fight our war in Iraq. And I was like, wow. That crosses even the line of being exploitive. That is utterly disgusting and sick. Now, when I met John Pendergrass, I told him this. I said, you'll never believe that. I saw military contractors recruiting in the IDP camps. I said, something needs to be done about this. You are an advocate. You need to take this to the highest levels. Without even skipping a beat or blinking an eye, he looked straight at me and he said, that's not happening. I got sickest feeling in my stomach. And I thought to myself, holy shit, I'm looking the devil in the eye.
Right.
This man is the epitome of evil. So I had to figure out who John Pendergrass was. So after that experience, I started talking to people, doing research, reading about him. John Pendergrass is an intelligence agent. He worked under the Clinton administration. He was a part of security and intelligence gathering for Africa. He was on the payroll of the U.S. government when the Rwanda genocide happened. He is a part of this problem. He is the Pied Piper of the fools and the buffoons at Invisible Children and at Resolve. He is everybody's hero. And I told him that I saw heinous activity being done by the hands of U.S. military contractors, and he blew it off and just said, it's not happening. And wow. I saw it with my own eyes. Now I thought, my goodness, I even need to dig into that deeper. Ugandans were telling me, oh, of course the U.S. is here recruiting. Like, what's so big about that? That's not a problem. And I'm like, oh my God, wait, how come in America we're not told that Africans, basically African mercenaries, are being hired to go fight our wars? That doesn't even get covered in the mainstream media.
Right.
Well, 2 years after I uncovered all of this, there were reports coming out of Al Jazeera. Hey, there are tens of thousands of Ugandans fighting war for America in Iraq. And I'm like, holy crap, now it's starting to come out. And many of those troops are Acholis. And one of the women that I met in northern Uganda was a translator expert learning a language so she could train translators in Iraq to communicate with the Acholi soldiers. And I'm like, why the fuck are there Acholis in Iraq? This was a strategic move by the Pentagon to use desensitized people who had already been through war to go fight our wars.
Right.
And that was never covered. So here I am divulging to an intelligence agent about what I know and then making a phone call to Invisible Children pretending to be Kony. Well, now reports are coming out that Kony actually may be dead. Or if he's not dead, the United States of America intelligence actually knows where he is. So here is some fool in Dallas calling Invisible Children saying he's Joseph Kony. Well, fuck if that ain't going to get me a visit. So all of this wrapped together, this Kony 2012 campaign, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is a psyops operation to prepare the hearts and minds of Americans for military intervention in parts of Africa, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Wow.
There's natural resources. There's oil. There's. We're supporting a genocidal dictator, and nobody is talking about that. Nobody's talking about it. Some people are starting to talk about, okay, the Acholi genocide. Some people are starting to say, well, of course Invisible Children knows that Museveni is also guilty, but they can't talk about it. Because if they talk about it, then they'll get kicked out of Uganda where their lives will be in danger. But if their lives are in danger, then they can't help the poor children who will die without Invisible Children. So they have to stay hush-hush. And they can't talk about the IDP camp. They can't talk about the genocide. They can't talk about Museveni. They can't talk about other guilty parties because without Invisible Children, then other children will die. Well, reports are that, I mean, Tony's long gone out of Uganda. He maybe has 400 to 500 rebels with him. You know, the numbers are overinflated. Tony is a non-issue. He is totally a non-issue. I mean, Invisible Children is going to ruin the tourism industry for Uganda by putting this in the news. And the other thing that people don't talk about is how did a stupid fluff video about old news about an African warlord that we've known about for years, how did that go viral?
Yeah.
How did it go viral?
How did it go viral, yes.
It went viral with the help of the United States government. There is no doubt that this was a strategic plan that they lined up. Invisible Children is the mouthpiece, the marketing company, PR company for the Pentagon. And they had interviews lined up with every major corporate media outlet. They had this video go viral. They got all of their little lemming, ignorant followers to spread this thing viral. Now, the other thing that's going on is YouTube now, you can monetize clicks on your own videos. Just by clicking on the video, they're making money. So as young kids are passing this around who don't know, you know, a drop of truth, or they don't know the complexities of this, and they're basically being raped. They're being raped in the mind using emotional extortion to pass this around the internet to make Invisible Children rich. If there is anybody listening to this program right now who is a lawyer or in the legal profession, Invisible Children's assets need to be frozen immediately. Immediately. Because they illegally gathered money, they're working intelligence for the U.S. government, and they also illegal lobbied for congressional legislation. This thing stinks to high heaven, and their assets should be frozen immediately until they're investigated. But nobody will do that, because you can't fight the United States of America, because the United States of America never, ever, ever does anything wrong. Ever. We're the good guys. We're Team America. Fuck yeah. And if you stand up, United States government, you're going to get a knock on your door. And you're going to get treated just like I got treated.
Do you care for your safety?
Well,
Michael?
I would say I know that bad things could happen. Whether these bad things are planned or by accident or made to look like an accident, they could happen. But I think about a quote from Malcolm X. When Malcolm X started to reveal the truth, not just about the Nation of Islam, when he realized that he was being bamboozled, when he was being misled by the Nation of Islam, pause. There was internal strife within the Nation of Islam, but there was also, you know, the federal government didn't exactly like Malcolm X because he was, the fear of a black man who's got a brain. And it was the same thing with Martin Luther King. Interviewers would ask the same question of Malcolm X. Can you hear me all right?
Now I can hear you. Yeah,
Malcolm X would be repeatedly asked the question, do you fear for your life? And he smiled, and he kind of chuckled, and he looked at him, and he said, fear?
Michael, we lost you again.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Malcolm X said, fear? Why should I fear? I died 20 years ago. I fear no man and no thing. That you're talking to a dead man already.
Mm.
Is free and he is liberated of the shackles of this world and the mental slavery of this world, that he doesn't fear anything. So I kind of use the date of January 19th, 2011. That died. When my home was invaded, the Constitution was breached, to have federal agents come into my house and humiliate me, humiliate my wife, intimidate me, I died on that day. Did I wake up in the morning now? Yes.
Right. How can people...
Sorry?
No, I was just going to ask you, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, that, you know, your work is very valuable. And, you know, I'm glad that, you know, that we're doing this interview so people can listen to this. People that are listening now, people that are listening on archive can not just support your work but also support you. Can you tell us where people can, you know, can read more or get a hold more of your work, you know, not regarding this, but also to follow up also regarding some of the good organizations on the ground in Uganda that you're working with. How can people, you know, get a hold of your website? What is your website? And also how can they get a hold of you on Facebook?
Yeah, well, what people can do is my website is, now there's somebody knocking at the door and it's like freaking me out. The doorbell's ringing and somebody's just banging on the door and I'm just totally freaked out. My website is independentglobalcitizen.com. I have a Facebook page for the same thing, independent global citizen on Facebook. My website's independentglobalcitizen.com. I encourage everybody, do research. I mean, we have access to loads of information. Part of the problem is critical thinking has disappeared from the minds of most people. I'm telling people now, don't believe me. Don't believe me, but use what I'm saying as cause yourself to question motives. Heck, you may even think that I have an agenda, but research it. Go on the internet, talk to people, listen to interviews, look at alternative media. Don't just look at corporate media, because this whole game of liberal media or mainstream media or conservative media, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, they're all the same. They're corporate. They have to make a profit. They have to sustain themselves, make their advertisers happy. Believe me, there's probably a big red button in everybody's control room that is run by somebody at the Pentagon or in the West Wing or the CIA, that if somebody like me comes on, it goes black.
That's right.
I'm going to allow information to get out. So do research. Talk to people, do research, listen. My website is totally devoted to the good news from Africa because it exists and it's abundant. It is abundant. So my passion is to tell those good stories of Africans helping Africans, Ugandans helping Ugandans, highlighting and showcasing the amazing creativity of Africa. That's all that you will find on my website. Of course, you can listen to your radio show and, you know, my Facebook page. You know, I have links from my website, the independentglobalcitizen.com. I have links to my personal Facebook page, you know, my fan page, my Twitter account, my LinkedIn. You know, if somebody wants to give me a job or have me work for them, you know, hey, you can access my LinkedIn and you can see my professional vocational profile. So, you know, just check it out. But be a critical thinker. By golly, I tell people, I have more respect for people who say that they don't give a rat's ass about other parts of the world and that we should help people here in America. I have more respect for people like that than people who say they care about other parts of the world, but they are misled because they are eating propaganda, lies, and they don't understand how the truth is twisted to serve an agenda. It happens. It happens in abundance, and people eat it up.
Right.
There's people in this world They do good, they do bad. Nobody's 100% good. I'll dare to say nobody's 100% bad. Now, some things I say may be true, some things I say may be false. But I'm telling you, this was an experience that happened to me personally. It's not something I read about, not something that somebody told me, not something I watched on the big screen in a movie, not something that I dreamed about. It happened to me. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show, and this is actually the first time I've actually talked about this. I have never, ever publicly spoken about this, and I've been holding on to this information for 5 years.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and appreciate the sacrifices and the risk that you've taken to put this information out. And I certainly hope and definitely thank him. You know, if I know our listeners well, that some of them will be getting in contact with you. Some of them are independent journalists themselves and have independent radio shows in places like California as well as Washington, D.C., that may be contacting you to come on the show, and I certainly hope they do. Is there an email address that you feel comfortable giving out for folks to get a hold of you if they want to?
It's on my website. Again, I feel like now I'm hawking something, but believe me, there's no donate button on my website. I'll give the website again, independentglobalcitizen.com. There's a contact sheet. It has our contact page. It has my email address, my Twitter account, my email address, all the links to everything Michael Kirkpatrick is out there. So, just check out my website. And, even if you just go to my name, just type in Michael Kirkpatrick Africa or Michael Kirkpatrick Uganda, I'll be the first thing that pops up.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate it. I want to thank your listeners for bearing with us. I'm a storyteller, and I tend to go on and on. So thanks to your listeners for bearing with me through all this.
Not a problem. Actually, I like that narrative because I think that was like, especially for this show and especially for a show about Africa, I think the storytelling, the griot mode was right on. So thank you for your the storytelling and most of all, thanks for the facts that you disclosed today. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was Michael Kirkpatrick, and that should be that information, that story that he told, the information that he disclosed should be riveting for almost anybody. And, it certainly was for me when I first heard that information offline. And Michael Kirkpatrick, as he just told you, has put himself at great risk, to disclose this information, and so in that same vein, we have Keith Harmon Snow, who I'll be bringing on in just one moment, is an independent journalist. Keith Harmon Snow is a absolute friend of the program, and we're a friend of Keith Harmon Snow first and foremost, and we're a friend of the work that Keith Harmon Snow continuously puts out there. And if you want to talk about somebody who has put himself at great risk, that is Keith Harmon Snow. He's put himself at tremendous risk because of the information that he discloses, and he's done some great work. I invite all of you to visit his site, which is Conscious Being Alliance. This is consciousbeingalliance.com. Check it out. And I really implore folks to support Keith Harmon Snow. I'll tell you this, as I said before with Michael Kirkpatrick, any organization or individual that we decide to go ahead and donate or we're considering donating our money to, we need to do the background information. And in that context, if you do the background information and based on what you heard Michael Kirkpatrick talk about and what Keith will talk about, invisible children is not where good people need to be putting their money. But if you do the background information with Keith Harmon Snow and the work that he's doing, there's a documentary project that he's been working on and working tirelessly on. I would say, definitely, if you have money to give, you know, donate to that project. There's also a book project that you can donate to him. Folks that do the work that Keith Harmon Snow does do not get supported. They don't get supported by they simply don't get supported by corporate entities in the U.S. I'll tell you that first and foremost. So check out ConsciousBeingAlliance.com. Keith, can you hear me?
Hey there, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for coming on the show again. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and especially when I know time is tight for you. But I appreciate you being willing to come on the show and talk about this important topic and disclosing information that our listeners far and wide need to know, not just about invisible children, but about, you know, everyone from the ICC to Luis Moreno Ocampo to John Pendergrass, the whole gamut. I mean, I was just looking at some of the stuff, the notes that you sent me earlier, and saw your interview on RT, I'm looking forward to this interview. So welcome on Your World News once again, Keith.
Thank you so much for having me on. Am I sounding clear enough?
Yeah, you can sound, yeah, a little bit muffled, but I can hear you clear enough. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what to do about that, but I'll just try to speak clearly. And
That sounds great right there.
Okay.
Keith, I wanted to I want to hit the ground running. I want to start off, you know, want to start off with your thoughts on Kony 2012 and the organization that put Kony 2012 out. I guess the front organization would be Invisible Children. So about them and who their possible financiers and backers are.
Well, Invisible Children seems to be a so-called nonprofit, so-called non-government, but they have very deep connections to the system. They obviously have moved around Uganda with the total support of the Pentagon at some level, at least the knowledge of the Pentagon, because they've met with all these officials and they've met with all these, military groups on the ground, including the Sudan People's Liberation Army, which, of course, the United States government has funded and armed for since 1990 through Uganda. And you see pictures of them with the Ugandan, with the Sudan People's Liberation Army in their film, for example. So Invisible Children is also getting funding apparently from J.P. Morgan and some of these big corporations, I guess. So, you know, J.P. Morgan is interested in buying up land in Africa. It's not an independent organization. And then Invisible Children has some connection to John Prendergast and the Enough organization, which you see in the film. And John Prendergast is one of the people in the film who's telling you a bunch of lies. And, of course, the biggest lie of the film is that there are no U.S. interests involved in the region. So John Prendergast sits there and says, you can't, the United States government would never do enough, and no one will do enough to address the problem of Joseph Kony and the terrorism because we don't have any U.S. interests in the region. Well, John Prendergast was National Security Council under William Jefferson Clinton, and he's an intelligence operative, and he's become the co-opted face of the supposed movements for these different countries, movement for Uganda, movement for Congo, movement for Rwanda, movement for Sudan. The Prendergast organization is Enough. It's called Enough, you know, basically after there's been enough genocide, never again, this psychological operation about how, you know, there should never be genocide again, that they've turned around and used this. They turn around and use this language, enough of that stuff. So Enough is supported by the Center for American Progress, and the Center for American Progress supports Enough and Resolve, which is another group like Invisible Children that's working in Uganda and takes the State Department line, and Raise Hope for the Congo. And Raise Hope for the Congo is a front organization supposedly working to help the people of the Congo, and it's not. And the STAND organizations, all of them, all these chapters on all these colleges that are now going to have Kony 2012 chapters. STAND is Students Taking Action to Stop Genocide in Darfur Now. And the whole Save Darfur movement, of course, was funded, supported by Judeo-Christian organizations, but also by the Center for American Progress. And so at some level, Invisible Children has the complete support of the Center for American Progress, the Enough organization, and John Prendergast. And that's why you see him in the film telling you this nonsense about how we don't have any interest there.
Right, and what are the what would be some of the U.S. interests in there. I've heard that there was a recent discovery of oil in northern Uganda. Is that true? And if so, what are some of the other interests, strategic interests that the U.S. has in Uganda and in the Great Lakes region in general?
Remember that the United States invaded Uganda through Yoweri Museveni, the current president, from 1980 to 1986. He was backed by the U.K., United States, and Israel.
Steve?
Levels. Yep.
Okay, I can hear you, man. You went out for about 7 seconds or so.
Probably my connection fades a little bit, but I'll try. So that 1980-86, we backed Museveni and invaded Uganda and overthrew the government there, and then 1993 to 1994, we backed. So that's what military intelligence is, right? And then we overthrew the government of Rwanda and then invaded the Congo. So, in the Great Lakes region, on the border of Uganda and in northern Uganda, I have a map from 1996, an oil map which shows these oil concessions. Oil and gas, these little so-called oil miners, M-I-N-O-R-S, minor companies, have Uganda. And then they what they do is they set themselves up. They don't look like a big oil company, and once they're working, then they sell off to a big oil company. But they're backed by the big oil company. And oil and agricultural production are the biggest resources in northern Uganda, as well as for American war operations in Uganda, in Rwanda, in Congo, in Kenya, and
Keith,
can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're almost like completely lost, like the last 20 seconds.
My phone has been acting up and my connection here isn't very good. I don't know what's going on.
All right, now I can hear you. Like, this is fine. If you could repeat the last like 30 seconds what you were talking about, going back to, you were talking about Museveni, I believe, invading. Hello?
Yeah, what time does your show end?
Pardon me?
What time does your show end?
We got time.
I just changed phone, so pick me up on the other line. I'm going to hang up on this one, okay?
Oh, and just call us back. Okay, sounds good.
I already called in. I'm in your queue.
Okay, oh, here you are. I see you. Keith, can you hear me now?
Yeah. How's this? Better?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, okay. So can you, can you go back, back to
okay, so,
the U.S. interest?
Okay, so basically, we supported the invasion of Uganda in 1980-86. We supported the invasion of Rwanda in 1990 to 1994, and we supported the invasion of the Congo. So Uganda is our defense base of operations. The Pentagon has bases in Congo, in South Sudan, in Uganda, Gulu, the heart of the Acholi land, which is the place where this Kony is supposedly operating. Gulu was an American base where we launched, C-130s. We're flying from the United States or from the European command and down into Entebbe, Uganda, in 1996. And basically, every hour for months, all day long, C-130s were bringing troops into the Congo for the invasion of the Congo in 1996. And through Gulu, they used the Gulu airport. And what Museveni did, the president of Uganda, was to put 2 million Acholis onto these death camps. And the Acholi people, of course, are the people that are portrayed in the film as being the victims of Joseph Kony. Museveni needed Joseph Kony to be the argument that Joseph Kony is attacking these people, so we need to round them up and put them on death camps to protect them. This was nonsense. Museveni was committing genocide against the Acholis, and this is a campaign, and it was a written policy of Museveni's. And Kony serves as the perfect bogeyman to be able to say, I need more military weaponry, I need more aid, which he converts to military weaponry. And so from 1990 until the present day, they've also been backing the invasion of Sudan, and Kony has been, part of that. The film says that Kony is not supported by anyone, and there's no reason for him. He has no purpose or no mission. This is not true. His mission has been to keep him. They keep him there in order to provide justification for Museveni to keep these 2 million Acholis in these camps and to further militarize Uganda. But what it's all about is oil and agricultural land and gold, and I think there's probably uranium in South Sudan, which they're after. And all of these properties, you have to get the people out of the way. They've gotten the people out of the way in South Sudan. They've gotten the people out of the way in northern Uganda to some extent, you know, by putting them on these death camps and killing them off. And now they're blaming Kony, but it's just a psychological operation meant to convince the American public that we need to, you know, completely uneducated American people, convince us that we need to call for an invasion of Uganda to stop this Joseph Kony, which it's just egregious psychological operation against the American public.
Right. And, man, that's a lot. What's up with Luis Moreno Ocampo and the ICC? Because in the video, the Kony 2012, which... and I totally agree with you that it's a great psyops, you know, operation. But he gets on there and he talks about stopping Kony and that almost being like a domino effect to solve other problems. And it seems like most of the people on their list, on the ICC's list, and I know he's the former, president of the ICC, but it seems like all the folks on the ICC's list, or the vast majority of them, are Black Africans. Is he an honest man trying to stop genocide?
No, the whole genocide framework is problematic, of course, because nobody accuses Museveni of committing genocide, but he has, and they don't accuse Kagame of committing genocide, but he has, and they don't accuse Meles Zenawi, the president of Ethiopia, of committing genocide. But if you go on my website, you can find the United Nations report that was produced about genocide in Ethiopia that they paid me to do with a Human Rights Watch, a former Human Rights Watch lawyer, and it was a very clear case of genocide committed by the government of Ethiopia. But the politics of genocide, which we've talked about before, is such that you have to blame somebody, so we blame the so-called terrorists. We create these enemies of the United States, Taliban or the Al Qaeda network that we created, or whoever it is, wherever it is. And in this case, it's Kony. He's the perfect little bogeyman. But Ocampo is not an honest man. He's just doing the bidding of the powerful. He's like Himmler or anybody who was working for Hitler at the time. He's just doing the bidding of the United States and the NATO powers. And the whole ICC, as you pointed out, is just arresting, indicting, and trying Black people. Is that justice in this world? Are we led to believe that only Black people are capable of being warlords, or only Black people are capable of committing atrocities? So the ICC, like the ICTY, the Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia, like the ICTR, the Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, these are called ad hoc tribunals. They're set up basically, I don't know if the ICC is an ad hoc tribunal, but the other two were set up basically only to serve as long as they needed to serve to solve the problem of supposedly trying people for genocide in Rwanda or genocide in Yugoslavia. And with the ICC, it's very similar. It's going to punish some people and completely ignore the bigger, larger-scale war criminals in the world, including George Bush or William Jefferson Clinton or Mark Rich, the guy that Clinton pardoned on his very last day in office. And Mark Rich runs these corporations called Glencore International, which is all over the bloodshed in the Congo. And at this very moment, Glencore International is involved in the oil deals and the land grab in South Sudan, Uganda, and on the Congo border. And other people that are, should be brought before international tribunals. But instead, we've got the very racist white supremacist system going after a few African warlords who are, the face of the violence is the African warlord. The face of the violence in the inner city in Los Angeles is the gang. But where are the drugs and the guns coming from? They're coming from the Central Intelligence Agency, as we found out through the book Dark Alliance, by Gary Webb, who was assassinated. And Webb exposed the network of the Contra connection to the CIA, the intelligence networks bringing in the drugs into the inner city and the weapons, and Webb was basically eliminated. So it's the same thing with these so-called warlords in Africa. Kony is a front man involved in something and supported by someone. But look at the Invisible Children video, 2012, Kony 2012, and you can see at one point, there's a kid where they're talking about the girls are enslaved for sex and the boys are turned into soldiers. And it shows this kid with a very beautiful photograph, green background, with a brand new AK-47 or Kalashnikov. Now, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I mean, it's 1 + 1 = 2, Solomon. One is the gun, and two is the person who sells it. But there's never any mathematical deduction to why the gun has killed somebody and where the gun came from, you know? So it's just absolute blatant racist propaganda at the deepest levels. And then, you know, here's the really ugly part. I sent you a link to this video, which I won't even post anywhere because I don't want other people to look at it. But it's the propaganda.
Yeah.
It's these videos that the government of Uganda gives to Ugandan soldiers before they send them to Somalia or before they send them to Sudan or before they send them to Iraq, because Ugandan soldiers are being used by the U.S. military in Iraq, or before they send them to Afghanistan. And the video is the most gory, gruesome, horrible, horrible thing you've ever seen. And I'll just give you a quick snippet of this. And what they're telling the soldiers is that this is what Islamic fundamentalists, if they catch you, this is what they'll do to you. They'll take your body, they'll kill you, first of all, or they'll keep you alive, but then they're going to put you on a table and they're going to cut you into pieces. And it shows them cutting these bodies, just the most gruesome, cadaverous, horrible stuff you've ever seen. As I say, I won't put the link out there publicly because I think it's too shocking, and I can't even hardly watch the whole, I can't even watch it. You know, it's just, so this is terrifying Ugandan soldiers into believing that, you know, who their enemy is. It's like the way the American military would propagandize kids to believe that, you know, whatever they believe, and that's the nature of propaganda. And that's how the Kony 2012 film is also functioning. It's to serve to propagandize the American mind to support a military invasion where, in fact, we were already militarily involved and have already basically invaded. I mean, U.S. troops have been on the ground there since 96. He sent in 100 new troops, called them advisors,
American advisors.
Called them armed advisors last October, which is just an insult to the American intelligence, the intelligence of the American people, because these are covert operations. They're seasoned, hardened war criminals. They've committed crimes in other places, and now they're doing that in Uganda. And, you know, we don't really know what's going on there. There's a lot going on, and we don't know what it is. There's bases in the north, U.S. military moving around. I've got reports, documented sightings from people when they saw troops where, before we invaded the Congo, and that sort of thing. But as long as people continue to watch this stuff, Kony 2012, or look at what the New York Times says about Kony 2012 in today's New York Times article by the Nicholas Kristof blog, and it's written by Lisa Shannon. I mean, this is and basically what she's saying is, yeah, there's a lot of complaints about the Kony 2012 video, but what we need to remember here is that we need to arrest Joseph Kony. No matter what you think about invisible children, we need to arrest Joseph Kony. No matter what you think about the propaganda system, we need to arrest Joseph Kony because he's committing atrocities against Museveni and their people, and that's absolute nonsense. So Lisa Shannon should be arrested and charged with war crimes as well because she's basically supporting the cover-up of this genocide against the Acholi people, and she's involved in the Congo. So,
and what else I found interesting is in that same video, you know, these so-called culture makers that we're supposed to text, such as Angela Jolie and Rush Limbaugh. Could you talk about that and also talk about this guy, Jim Inhofe, Republican from Oklahoma, you know, and the quote, the quote that he has, and he's portrayed in that as like some, you know, benevolent politician that really gives a damn about, you know, black children in Uganda.
Yeah, if you go to the Kony 2012 thing, of course, they take you through the video, the film, and then at the end they tell you how they're targeting these culture makers, and these culture makers are the ones who make our culture. They make and change the world. So Angelina Jolie or George Clooney or Rush Limbaugh? Rush Limbaugh is a culture maker in America. It just gives you a sense of how sick our society has become, where somebody, these white kids who consider themselves doing a good thing, are using Rush Limbaugh as a culture maker, as an example of somebody who's making culture in the United States. I mean, everybody knows, if they don't, they should, about the recent Rush Limbaugh slur against this Georgetown University law student woman, calling her a slut because she believes in contraception.
Right.
Well, you can make a direct, I mean, Rush Limbaugh should never be on the air. He's a demagogue. He's a liar. He uses the worst methods of propaganda to inflame people, you know, all kinds of nasty stuff. He just shouldn't be on the air. And that's not an issue of freedom of speech. It's an issue of the truth. So then you can make a direct connection to this guy, Jim Inhofe, who's the Republican senator from Oklahoma, I believe. I mean, he's our Oklahoma, and I think he's a senator. And he says in the Kony 2012 film, of all the problems that are out there, none is more severe than one that mutilates and takes the lives of little kids. So this guy, Joseph Kony, is pretty nasty, and there's nothing worse than that. So let's do a little analysis of what's worse than taking the lives of little kids like Joseph Kony supposedly does. Well, how about dropping nuclear weapons on them? How about genocide against the American people? I mean, like Native Americans. How about genocide against the people in Vietnam? How about the war crimes that are going down in Afghanistan by American troops, where they're cutting up people, cutting up bodies, where they piss on people and then they shoot them, they hang them, and they torture them, brutalize them. I mean, this the idea that Jim Inhofe is outraged about this Kony thing is absolute nonsense. He has no moral basis, no moral foundation. He should not be used as a source of moral integrity to inspire young Americans to do the right thing, and that's what they're trying to do here. So they use him, putting forth the idea that he's a clean, honest American diplomat, government official. Well, look at his voting record. He's right-wing, he's anti-women, he's anti-abortion, he's pro-father's rights in the sense that it doesn't matter what the right rights of the woman are. He's anti-immigration, he's nationalist, he's anti-gay, he's anti-affirmative action, he's anti-civil rights. He supports increasing the criminal war on drugs, which means just intelligence and more defense. He's pro-corporations, he's pro-drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. He's totally anti-environment. He's in favor of more surveillance against the American people. He's in favor of more wiretapping and in favor of expanding Homeland Security. And he's just voted the wrong way on all of these war issues in the world. So, you know, like the invasion of Iraq or pulling the troops out of Iraq or bombing Kosovo or whatever. The guy's a nightmare. And that's the whole problem with the whole film. It's basically a bunch of white guys who are completely unconscious to what they're doing, being presented as if they have the highest moral standard, the highest ethical integrity, and what they're doing is the right thing, and you need to support them. And it doesn't matter whether you know anything at all about the truth of what's gone down in Uganda. You're supposed to support these guys by buying a T-shirt or buying one of their special Kony 2012 packages. And so they sold this stuff out. And if you look at Kony 2012, it's just a money-making operation. You know, it's a money-making operation. It's an intelligence operation. It's a psychological operation. It's a massive deception, and people have eaten it up left and right. So,
and the fact that it like literally within 2 days, it had over 50 million views. It just seems to me that you know, if this was like truly like some kind of grassroots organization, what have you. That, I mean, it's impossible. So do you believe as well? I was talking to Michael Kirkpatrick earlier, and he believes that this is a coordinated effort, you know, along with the State Department, the CIA, U.S. government, and that's, you know, that's how they were able to get, you know, all these hits, and they had these interviews lined up on all the major networks. Do you believe that as well?
Well, Michael's in a better position to make that assessment than I am. To me, it doesn't matter. If it's very likely that it was a coordinated effort with the U.S. government, there's everything that suggests to me that it was a coordinated effort with the U.S. government, but it doesn't matter because even if it wasn't completely coordinated, everything was in place such that when these guys released their video, the U.S. system would snatch it up and run with it, and that's exactly what happened. They gave it coverage. They gave it press. They fed the frenzy by giving it coverage and press. And so it received, and, you know, of course, Clooney and all of these culture makers did their part to get it out there, and that's what you're talking about. That's what it means to, you know, be a good German and support the system on some level. So it really doesn't matter to me whether it was orchestrated at the deepest levels. I think the fact is it probably was, and we should be really concerned about that. But most people won't even entertain that possibility.
Not at all. Who... who are the SPLA? They're in that same video. There was a picture they were shown, Invisible Children. They were shown with the SPLA. What is that about? And you know, and I guess for many of our listeners, who is the SPLA? Who are they?
Yeah, it's just another example of what they don't tell you in the video. They don't give you any facts or grounding in, you know, deeper history. And then their argument is, well, we didn't try to give you the deeper history. We just want it to be superficial so that people will actually do something. Well, that's fascism. So the SPLA, the Sudan People's Liberation Army, was founded in roughly 1984 in Sudan when the place was ruled by the CIA operative. He was a CIA operative named Nimieri. When Nimieri was president of Sudan in 1984, John Garang began as the Sudan People's Liberation Army as a truly liberation army. And Nimieri was, of course, backed by the United States. And Garang was from the south, and it's always been a Christian-based south. The Christians live in the South Sudan, and the Muslims mostly live in the north. Not only Muslims, but mostly. And so Garang started in 1984, but in 1990, Garang sold out to the United States and became an agent of the U.S. And then he began committing atrocities left and right, which had nothing to do with the truth or nothing to do with liberation for the people. And so from 1990 until the present day, the SPLA has been the U.S., the Contras of Sudan, basically, the Contras of Sudan, the same thing that went down in Nicaragua. So death squads and, illegal weapons shipments, illegal weapons sales, and through Uganda. Uganda's right next to South Sudan, so of course the weapons go in from Museveni and they go up into South Sudan, and the troops move in and out and the intelligence officials move in and out through Uganda. And so we've been fomenting this war against Khartoum, the government in the north, the Arab Islamic government in the north, just as we fomented a war against the president of Rwanda, Juvenal Habyarimana, from 1990 to 1994. So the exact same thing has played out there, and we've accused the government of Sudan, like we accused the Habyarimana government, of genocide. And this is all done through this Smith College professor, Dr. Eric Reeves, who is an absolute nightmare, lunatic. Reeves is a liar. He's used State Department information. He invents sources. He invents facts. He has inflamed the American public by claiming that there was genocide going on in Sudan in 1996. And then again in 2003, he shifted to Darfur and started screaming genocide in Darfur. He never talks about the atrocities committed by the SPLA. He never talks about the fact the SPLA is involved in this war and we're funding them and arming them and training them. He never talks about Christian missionaries flying in with Bibles and dumping them on starving people. And he never talks about the fact that some of these missionary organizations are also known for shipping in weapons. He doesn't talk about the fact that American Wall Street bankers have bought up all of this land in South Sudan now, and we're talking about millions and millions of hectares. He doesn't talk about the fact that Coca-Cola gets its essential ingredient, one of its most essential ingredients, out of Sudan, and that's gum arabic, and two-thirds of world supply is found in Sudan, and it's the best gum arabic in the world. And the SPLA is the fighting force that Dr. Eric Reeves at Smith College, this English professor, he's basically their mouthpiece, and the U.S. government uses him, funnels the information to him in his office in Smith College, and he puts it out there, and everybody picks it up, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Christian Science Monitor, whoever, anybody, everybody. And then it becomes a story told by Dr. Eric Reeves, which is basically like this Kony 2012 thing. It's just a simplified story, or it's even a complicated story in the case of Reeves, but it's not the truth. It's a one-sided propaganda campaign. And so that's why nobody knows who the SPLA is.
All right. Unbelievable. Since you mentioned the professor at Smith College, can you talk about the memo that was uncovered by Dr. Todd Whitmore, where he spoke on Museveni and his calls for genocide? And I mentioned that because Museveni is the president of Uganda, and the U.S. government has a very cozy relationship with him. And I think a lot of folks may not know what kind of blood he has on his hands.
Museveni, well, there's this claim that Museveni and the 27 rifles, these are the 27 guerrillas that brought Museveni to power in Uganda from 1980 to 1986. And that period was a bloody, bloody, bloody period in Uganda, and the genocide in the Luwero Triangle and the genocide against the Acholis all had their origins in this period under Museveni. And Museveni was the master of creating atrocities and blaming them on the enemy. So in 1983, 84, they would commit atrocities and blame them on the government of Uganda. The reasons the United States and Britain and Israel didn't like the government of Uganda at the time was because it was a sort of a socialist government. And the last thing they want is a government who's going to feed the people or build roads for the people or take care of the people. So they wanted this guy Milton Obote out of there. And Museveni came to power but through bloodshed, and at his right hand, you know, his right-hand man was Paul Kagame, the current president of Rwanda, and Kagame became Museveni's director of military intelligence. And then over the next, from 1986 until 1990, they planned the invasion of Rwanda to overthrow the president of Rwanda. And everybody knows about the so-called Rwanda genocide, which led to, you know, 500,000 to a million deaths in Rwanda, according to the system. Well, somewhere from 1990 to 1994, somewhere between 1 and 2 million people died in Rwanda because of Museveni in Uganda and Paul Kagame. And this was all backed by the Pentagon, and they invaded Rwanda with the support of this guy, Roger Winter. Roger Winter works out of Washington, D.C., and he's had a special appointment as a top U.S. official who has a very special position just to basically, nobody talks about it this way, but to invade and overthrow governments. And so Winter has now been, since we succeeded in Rwanda in 1994, Winter's been focused on Sudan. And Winter's the guy who feeds the information to Dr. Eric Reeves at Smith College to produce this propaganda about Sudan. So going back to Museveni, Museveni helped overthrow the government of Rwanda, and we called it genocide, just like we did in Sudan against the government of Khartoum. But in Rwanda, we called it genocide against the Hutus, because they supposedly killed off all these Tutsis. And that big myth is, you know, really running strong right now, the whole myth about genocide. It's a mythology. It's not that it's false. It's just that it's been told falsely. So people need to understand who's really behind it. It's Museveni and Kagame and the Pentagon and Israel. Israel had this Mossad operative like Roger Winter from the United States. They had a Mossad operative named David Kimchi, who was helping the RPF to overthrow Habyarimana. And then after Museveni and Kagame succeeded in Rwanda and killed off all these people.
And, of course, they're still killing people in Rwanda today, and they've got, for example, a campaign to
sterilize all Hutu men in Rwanda today. And so then they invaded the Congo. And Museveni and Kagame are the Pentagon's two big men in Central Africa at this very moment. And they're, you know, responsible for somewhere around 10 to 12 million deaths or more since 1980.
Wow. Jeez. You mentioned Kagame, and you recently, I believe, what is your, don't you have a status of persona non grata with the government of Rwanda?
They put me on a hit list of some kind. There was a leaked list in the Kinyarwanda language. And I was on that list, and they call me a genocidaire, they call me a genocide denier, you know, and it's the same thing with anybody who talks about the crimes of Israel or the crimes of these Jewish bankers in Central Africa, in Congo, for example, Dan Gertler, the Diamond Man, or Maurice Tebelspan, the Diamond Man, who was Jackie Kennedy Onassis' lover. If you start talking about these guys, you know, they start calling you anti-Semitic, or that you're a Holocaust denier. So they've been doing that with me about Rwanda. But the truth is, there were hundreds of thousands of Tutsis killed in Rwanda in 1994. From April 6th, which was the date that the United States supported Kagame to shoot down the plane and kill the two presidents of Rwanda and Burundi. And on that day, that sparked the so-called 100 Days of Genocide. And then from April 6th, 1994, until July 15th, 1994, hundreds of thousands of Tutsi people lost their lives in what would be called genocide. But who was responsible for that? The truth is, Kagame didn't like, he's an elite Tutsi who fled Rwanda in 1959 or 62, somewhere around there, with all these Tutsi elites who fled. And all these Tutsis didn't flee. So there were French-speaking Tutsis who stayed in Rwanda, and then there were Tutsis who grew up in Uganda and were English-speaking Tutsis, and Tutsis who moved to the United States and supported the invasion of Kagame. So these elite Tutsis who speak English came in from Uganda, with Museveni's backing. They invaded a sovereign country in October 1990, and then over the next 4 years, they committed massive atrocities against everybody in their path, Hutus, Tutsis, and Twa. Twa is the minority indigenous people there. And then in 1994, after the plane went down, Kagame took certain actions to make sure that these French-speaking Tutsis would also be eliminated. And if they were, it fit his plan perfectly because he can stand up and say, we are the victims of genocide, we being the Tutsis. But Kagame and his elite Tutsis didn't care at all about the real Tutsis of Uganda, of Rwanda. And Kagame, remember, was a Ugandan. He grew up in Uganda. He had Uganda citizenship. He had power. He had money. He had everything because he was Museveni's director of military intelligence. So this all goes back to the point that, you know, the history of the hunt will be told. As long as the history of the hunt is told by the hunter, the lions will have no voice. Until the lions can tell the story of the hunt, it will always be the history of the hunter.
Right, that's right, that's right. I totally agree about that. Keith,
I mean, it's the same with slavery in America or the slave trade, and it's the same with the destruction of the Native Americans. We're still putting out propaganda that supposedly is revealing about what happened against Native Americans, like the movie Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, but it's still a cover-up. It's still mythologizing and covering up and basically assuaging the American conscience, the white American's conscience, you know? So...
That's right. People that listen now that are on archive, this is the first time that they're hearing about this, and they were compelled to listen because, you know, they strongly, you know, supported or were moved by Invisible Children and Kony 2012, and now, you know, this information is startling to them. What alternatives would you have for people who are genuinely saying, okay, you know, I didn't know about this, and I didn't, you know, before Kony 2012, yeah, I'll admit I'm a Johnny come lately, a bit reactionary, but I want to, you know, help out in some way, whether it's, you know, putting an end to, you know, some of these nefarious plans that, you know, with Bechtel and the oil pipeline in Uganda to the agribusiness connection to, you know, the Invisible Children and the selling off of that land. What would you say to the average person that, you know, what should they do? What would, you know, your advice be to somebody who is generally, you know, concerned but somewhat new to this information?
Well, there's, you know, layers and layers and levels at which people can take action. You know, one of my best teachers is the black professor that I've known all my life from UMass, called his former UMass professor named Dr. Enoch Page. And Dr. Page will teach you, just like Amos Wilson. I mean, if your listeners aren't reading Amos Wilson, then they're reading the New York Times. You know, it's 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 3 = 0. I mean, you read Amos Wilson, you get the truth. You read the New York Times, you don't. So what are you going to do? But people have addictions to the media, so they're going to keep reading the New York Times, saying, well, I can read the Times, and then I can read Amos Wilson, and at the end of the day, I'll have a pretty balanced picture. No, you got to read Amos Wilson, and you got to read Dr. Enoch Page. And Dr. Enoch Page would say, are you going to sacrifice your children to save your body? And I don't think anything else needs to be said. Stop consuming the American media and ask yourself, are you going to sacrifice your children to save your body? Are you going to sacrifice this earth to save your body? Are you going to sacrifice your parents to save this body? Because I don't believe that our life revolves around the physical shell that we're in. And until people recognize that they have to take decisions and make choices at a very deep level, they're going to think they can do something superficially like read a book that'll tell them what to do, or they can watch a different film, or they can listen to Keith Armand Snow on your report. You know, I mean, these things are important, but consciousness requires a serious waking up, and anybody who watched that film and believed it is asleep. And the sleeping sickness is very deep. So you have to ask yourself, am I going to sacrifice the children of this planet to save my body? And if people can say yes, then fine. I can't do that personally.
Right. Some people... Unfortunately, some people may say that, unfortunately.
Oh, people lie to them. We lie to ourselves, you know. I'm going to lie to myself today. I'm going to take care of myself. Well, I didn't take care of myself yet today, so the lie is that I'm you know, I think people should just think about that. Are you going to sacrifice the children? Are you going to sacrifice the animals? Are you going to sacrifice your water? Save your body.
Right.
So, and given that, you know, people can read Thoreau and they can read Martin Luther King and they can read Tolstoy's, not War and Peace. You don't read Tolstoy's War and Peace.
Yeah.
You read The Kingdom of God is Within You. And there's a reason they don't teach The Kingdom of God is Within You at colleges. It's because it's what Martin Luther King read, and it's what Gandhi read, and it's what some of the best, most moral people who have ever lived have studied. So
yeah,
that's what I would say to that.
Okay.
If you want to understand the details about Uganda, I've published tons on my website. So not to push my own horn, but seriously, it's there, and I've got, you read one of my articles, you can look at the sources and the references, and you can read those. But I think that's a form of insanity, thinking that you can read everything and figure out what's going on. Not everybody can do that. And, you know, we can't do it about every subject. So then it comes back to this very simple question. Are you going to sacrifice the children to save your body?
Yeah.
Because it's asking you to make a significant change in the way that you're living your life.
All right.
And people don't want to do that because it's so frightening.
Right.
You have to walk into the darkness.
All right. Keith, I'd be remiss, you know, if I didn't ask you this before you left. And I'm glad you put your, you know, you mentioned your website, because I, you know, I've told my listeners to, you know, to definitely check your website out, because if they're really sincere, they'll go there and they'll peruse through it and read. And the great thing I like about all your pieces are they're heavily referenced. So if someone is skeptical, they can go straight to the references and start to do their vetting, you know, the vetting that you did, you know, in order to put together these pieces. My question is, you're working on this documentary right now. Can you talk about your documentary, what it's about, and how close you are to complete it, and what kind of, financial setbacks it's given you, you know, putting this this documentary together? Because I was telling folks that, you know, they should consider, you know, donating to that project, because just based on the trailer that you let me hold, it's compelling, to say the least.
Well, our film is about the politics of genocide, so it's a word that we shouldn't even be using this day and age, because it's become so corrupted. But, you know, it has its roots, of course, in the Nuremberg trials, but we're not going to go into that. We're going to focus on what's happened in Uganda from 1980 to 1986 and then onwards, and then Rwanda from 90 to 94 and onwards, and then the Congo, and also Burundi. But Burundi is, I'm afraid, to be honest, I just don't know so much about it, so we're going to only go into it. We don't know how deeply yet. But anyway, it's going to look at the claim that this genocide was committed against these Tutsis in Rwanda by the Hutus, and that 800,000 Tutsis were killed, and it occurred in 100 days. And it's going to tell the real story, which is very different from that. There was genocide in Rwanda. It was against Tutsis. It was also against Hutus. But the term genocide has no meaning when you look at the context of the killing, who did the killing, how they did the killing, and when they did the killing. And so the genocide term has become this completely corrupted offense to the idea of the Holocaust, which was, you know, a real, genuine genocide. So we're going to look into this by going to original sources, survivors who made it through the killing in Rwanda, escaped to the Congo by the, you know, a threat of their life, and then were chased down. They saw people slaughtered and massacred in the Congo by American forces. They saw people slaughtered and massacred in the Congo by the current government of Rwanda. And they were chased across the country, and they survived somehow. And some of them ended up back in Rwanda in death camps and survived that again, and finally made it out to the United States or Belgium or wherever. So we're talking to survivors. We're talking to academics who know the facts very well, but they're still academics, and they're suffering from their own form of disease. And then we're talking to anthropologists, and we're talking to military officials from the UN, as well as diplomats and former Ugandan officials, for example, the president of Uganda, of Rwanda from 1990 to 1994, from 1973 to 1994 was Juvenal Habyarimana, and he was killed in the double presidential assassination of 94, but we've done an interview with his sons, and one of them was there when he was killed, was in his home, and just by a fluke of nature, the plane was exploded by these missiles, and then it crashed, and his body, the father's body, was strewn over the compound of the family. You know, it just landed in their own yard, and this kid went around picking up the pieces of his father, along with all these other people. And so, you know, nobody ever talks about the Habyarimana family, honestly, so we're talking to them, and a lot of people who worked in Rwanda, and, you know, and that's the basis for the story, but it's going to be a, you know, we hope, a very fascinating artistic film about the real story of what's gone down in Central Africa, so...
Okay, thank you. And so donations do help to the project, do help, you know, I guess do help the project come to fruition.
Well, the project's not moving forward without donations, and we don't have any. So we've been in a freeze frame until recently. We got a donation just recently that's just taken us out of the freeze frame. But without donations, we aren't going to be able to finish the project. So we're, you know, working on getting a website up, and we're working on getting a trailer, basically a short video DVD of the, which kind of introduces the film, for a fundraising tool. But we're working on that as best we can. But we do need donations. It's all independent. We don't have any, as you can imagine. There's no foundations that come forward to say they want to help us produce this film, and we're not going to get any funding from the Center for American Progress. So yes. Donations are essential. Every $20 makes a huge difference, and you know, $1,000 is
huge.
You know, huge. Yes.
Yeah. So, my last question: given that, how can people get a hold of you if they, for whatever reason, if they'd like to, you know, have you, you know, talk to the organization? Or if they'd like to, I mean, I know if they want to give, they can, you know, donate through PayPal. But just in general, if somebody wants to get a hold of you for whatever reason, what's the safest way to go about it, the most comfortable way you're okay with disclosing over the internet?
Sure, just go to consciousbeingalliance.com. Consciousbeingalliance.com. You can email me through that, and people can donate through that, and people can look at the stuff I've done recently and even the stuff that's more archived. And there's also a lot of my writing on allthingspass.com. And both of them have links to me, so you can get in touch with me if you need to. But I would love to have people organized to get me to speak at colleges. It's very helpful. You know, we need to counter this Kony 2012 stuff, which they're setting up chapters for all over the United States. And so you see the real thing, and you understand just how usually you've been betrayed, and that sounds, maybe that sounds egotistical, but you know, it's just the truth. The truth is the truth. So,
all right.
I'm sure you've got listeners who are saying, well, everybody has their own truth. Okay, well, you can figure it out at the end of the day, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
People know in their heart what the truth sounds like. And if you listen to that 2012 film, and you listen to Solomon, and you listen to Keith, you can understand where the truth lies. You can hear the truth versus the fiction. You can tell when people are not telling the truth.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they're crying. I mean, you can put a little kid on there and make them cry. That's not
exactly
the truth, but it's also not the truth.
Right.
The truth about those kids is that all these kids were put on these death camps by Museveni.
And Keith,
greater truth.
And you're right, Keith. And there's something that you said when I saw you on Russia Today. Can you expound upon that, you know, on my show? Your interview was not as long as I would have liked it to be, especially when it got to that question, the question of white supremacy and whiteness, and you know, and that obliviousness. Can you talk about that? How that is tapped into on with invisible children in general, and also with that video, the whole whiteness? Because I've heard you talk about that a lot, the whiteness and white supremacy of, you know, of invisible children, Kony 2012, genocide, so forth.
Well, that goes back to who's that famous black poet writer who said it's the innocence that constitutes the crime. because it's the innocence of the guys who make the film Invisible Children, which is the crime. It's the very crime, the innocence. It's the I won't be challenged. It's the I know best. You are not in a position to challenge me. Who's going to challenge me anyway? Anyways, I'm getting all this support from all these other white people or black people. I must be doing the right thing. So they show you, they show these kids going to Congress and talking to these black congressmen, right, or these black senators, like Donald Payne. I mean, he's one of Africa's biggest nightmares, Donald Payne. And so the whiteness is that the white man is the savior. The white man is that these kids are not involved in the atrocities, that these kids, the fact that they have a cell phone has nothing to do with the killing in the Congo. They don't raise that question. Cell phones are made from raw materials out of the Congo, but that's not going to come up for discussion. It's just a sense of privilege. It's a sense of access. White man goes in and out. White man gets malaria. He goes home. He gets cured. He comes back. Africans don't do that. They don't even get access to the best malaria drugs. White man has a passport. There are gatekeepers, and the white man goes in and out. The passport system is a gatekeeping system. If it wasn't, I would be able to bring one of these Congolese professors into the United States, but I can't. It's a very difficult process. So it's just the nature of privilege. It's the nature of a belief system which says that I am better, the white man is better, superior, and it's a sense of arrogance and lack of accountability. I'm unaccountable for my actions. You can't challenge me because, of course, what I'm doing is right. So there's this sense of outrage that the white man expresses when he's confronted with his whiteness and, of course, has done no work to understand his whiteness or her whiteness. Then it's a sense of outrage. It's a sense of infuriation. It's anger and frustration. A real honest white person confronted with their whiteness would say, huh, you know, I never looked at it like that before. But they're not, but, you know, most of us white people aren't going to do that. So there's a lot of really good books that unpack this for people of color as well as people for white people to understand ourselves. One of them is a very simple book called The Whiteness of Power by a woman named Paulette Goodge from London. And she went to Nicaragua on the belief that she was going to change the world as a young woman and work with the Sandinistas to, you know, save Nicaragua from the Contras and that sort of thing. And she had an idea in her head, but she didn't recognize this at the time, that she was going to meet some, you know, romantic interlude in the forest with some guerrilla from the, you know, the resistance movement, and that she was going to have an adventure. And so she had to examine, eventually she looked at what she was doing and she said, I'm not making a difference here. In fact, I'm making these people's lives worse, and I can see it going on all around me, but nobody in my organization is willing to look at this. And it's the same with Invisible Children. They're not willing to look at the ways in which they're causing this situation to be worse for the people of Uganda. They're only willing to think that they're wonderful and that they're, well, we've got $9 million in profits, so we're going to give, you know, okay, well, we're only giving 30% back to the camps, but that's better than nothing, isn't it? Or the fact that we're getting Rush Limbaugh to talk about it is really important, don't you think? It doesn't matter that he called some woman from Georgetown University a slut because she believes in contraceptives. I mean, the hypocrisy is so deep. So that's, you know, I'm just sort of going off here about whiteness. But another book, you can take it to a more intellectual level and look at the real intellectual underpinnings of it by going to a book called Race and the Epistemologies of Ignorance. And that's a very interesting book, too. So, but there's lots of stuff out there that if white people want to unpack their whiteness, they just have to have the courage to start doing it. And you know, part of the problem is they say, oh, well, how do I do that?
Right.
You know, it's just immediately writing off the problem as if it's something that's insurmountable. They can build mountains, they can move mountains, they can build spacecraft, but to ask them to address their own whiteness, oh, I have no idea. And so they don't begin. So,
yeah.
But, you know, people of all colors do the same thing to dismiss reality and just try to figure out how to survive in this sometimes difficult world. And that's understandable, but it goes back to that very simple question. Are you going to sacrifice the children to save your body?
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you so much for coming on again, Keith. I really appreciate taking your time out of your busy schedule. And
and disclosing this important, this really important information. And I can only hope that at least a few people will take this information to heart and actually, you know, and start to do something with it, you know, and not let themselves be consumed by this appropriately deemed by yourself and actually Michael before you, a PSYOPS, you know, project.
Yep. So. Well, Solomon, you're doing wonderful work, and I appreciate your consciousness, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Take care, brother.
All right. Bless you.
You too.